is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Welcome to the show, Stuart Wild.
Thank you very much.
John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, how are you?
Next up, Dr. David Morehouse.
I'm so glad that you called me because you are doing such an important task, important work, because you are spreading a very positive message.
I was really moved by last week's show because we made a commitment to a worldwide event to try to change consciousness.
I'm feeling enormous energy around this show, just enormous. I really have to hand it to you, Nicole. You've created sort of a niche of amazing connections. It's just like the angels and the devatas that are like attracted to News for the Soul is amazing.
Hello, everybody. This is Damian Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Enfoldment. This is News for the Soul.
Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor.
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading-edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. And we are live. The much-anticipated, long-awaited introductory interview with Stacey Walters. That's what's happening in this hour. We've met her unofficially before, and now we're just going to make it officially official. Stacey, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, Nicole. Thank you for having me today, and I'm super excited to do this interview so you can learn a little bit more about me and then certainly your audience.
Yes, indeed. And I'm excited about your being a part of our community because we greatly appreciate people in different walks of life and lines of work to bring in the awakened perspective on things. So with that in mind, I want to ask my classic first question. That's the place that I start with everyone on these intro interviews because it's the place that connects us together as a movement and a community that is News for the Soul now in its 23rd year. And that's that place of awakening. You know, we've all had these unusual or outside the 3D norm kind of experiences with something that got our attention, maybe even set us on our purpose and path in life. And I'm curious what yours might be, your earliest recollection of something like that, and also your most profound. So wherever you'd like to start.
You know, my earliest recollection was probably when I was about 12 years old, and I had a very vivid, I'm going to call it a vision, what I think at that time a lot of people call deja vus. And it's where you feel like you've been somewhere, but you know you haven't been there, or you didn't do that particular thing. And it was so vivid. There were two girls in our neighborhood who I would play with frequently, and this deja vu was a scenario where we were all in our bathing suits, and my mother had these huge camellia bushes. So they bloom pretty constant throughout the year. and they drop their flowers as a whole, so they don't just drop the petals. And so it's like these whole giant, about the size of your hand, camellia flowers. And we're having like this war. We're in our bathing suits and we are throwing these flowers at each other and we're laughing and we're giggling. And as I followed this vision, it's giving me chills to just even talk about it. It seems so real that I had to really contemplate to myself, but I haven't done that before. What a great idea. How much fun would that be if I did have my friends over and we had this, you know, flower war, bathing suits, and then ran and played in the yard as we normally do. And so that really was my first, I think, I'm going to just, you know, kind of call it epiphany, where I'm going, you know, maybe I have been here and done some of this before at some point with some of these souls that touch my life.
Deja vu is so interesting. What is your theory on it based on how it felt?
Well, yeah, I have felt for a really long time, even though I'm a Christian woman, that we live many lifetimes. Our soul, and I think either we choose or the divine chooses for us to have different journeys. And I now later in life have learned a lot of times the souls that we connect with, we come back and we actually share the same life. It might not be the same story that plays out, but they have a lot of the same influences. And so now I think these deja vus really probably were, you know, transcendental times when I did have that experience, because it feels so real and it's almost like a flashback to a point in time. And I think it was a point in time. Me feeling like I'm a pretty old soul, I'll tell you, I feel at one point in my life I was a whale. I love whales. Why in the world do I love whales? I don't think it's just an affection. I'm pretty sure I've been a cat at some point in my life, and I joke about how insane my life has been this go around. And as the next lifetime, I need to come back as a kitty because I need some rest. I need to be able to just sleep and be loved and just go hunting. And so I want to come back as a kitty. So, you know, whether or not my feelings and theories are right, who knows? But they're fun and certainly not hurtful or harmful to embrace. I know where my destiny lies with this lifetime, that at the end of it, where I will go, how it, you know, manifests itself into the future for my soul, only God knows.
But, you know, I think something you said was really important, that from any belief system anywhere in the world, when you feel into something, you know, you can feel the depth of our going on this. It doesn't feel like it's a one-shot deal and it goes away. We feel eternal on some level, don't we, when you feel into it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And sometimes I, you know, those past experiences, like that's what drives our intuition. My logic, I'm a very logical type of person. I was originally, I will call it a scientist because I was a biology major. Love the research and the excitement of sorting that thing out and coming up with a theory. And then I really have migrated more to tapping into more of the logical, but still really enjoy the in-depth and the detail research. And when we do those things, we start to abandon, as we get older, that intuition. My own philosophy is that our experiences as a soul, those experiences carry forward with us, and that drives our intuition, our gut. You know, it's one of those days where you wake up and you go, daggone it, I knew I should have turned right, but instead I thought, no, I'll go left, you know? And you beat yourself up for it because your gut was saying, oh, I think I need to go right, but instead our logic says go left. So, I feel like one of my downfalls that continues to be as a human being that honestly is more like a human doing, because I do all day long, is not following that intuition. I think that intuition is really driven by our soul and our connection to the divine.
It's a very powerful lesson, though. We know that we knew, and even if we didn't do it, we remember that very well. We know we knew, and that's profound.
Yes, we know we knew, although my mantra is we don't know what we don't know, but we know we knew when we knew it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so it's all a learning experience. Now, I'm curious how this awakening feeling put you on a certain path, or did it affect your path in life, the deja vu experience?
I think how I pulled away from those deja vus was I didn't dismiss them anymore. When I have them, I open up and I try to follow it as far as I can because it's an adventure. It is an opportunity to be able to see where it's going to go, even though it's not you in that exact moment actually being the one that's going. So for me, it really was an awakening in that maybe there's something here to learn. Maybe there is some information to glean and bring, you know, to your current present. And so I used to have a lot more deja vus than I do now. I think part of it is because me, myself, have had such a long tenure over the last 12 years, which I suspect we'll hear about here today, that I stay too busy. My mind stays too busy, and being able to calm and focus. So when I was younger and life wasn't so crazy and we didn't have as many adult responsibilities and I didn't have children and my parents weren't aging and things like that that distract me, those deja vu opportunities would come along. And instead of dismissing it and just kind of keep busily doing whatever it was I was doing, I'd stop and just embrace it and follow it for as long as I could follow it until the story ended or until I got interrupted, the phone rang or the knock on the door, what have you.
Meditating might be an interesting activity for you at some point. Some interesting things may come of that. But in the interim, so how did this sort of set you on your path as far as doing things differently in a more aware way as you went down the path of life?
That's a great question. I'm a very prayerful person. I was raised in the church, but not steeped in the church. We went for the usual holidays. I went for Bible school in the summer break and, you know, did your Sunday morning class and participated like in youth groups and that sort of thing. When I was older, probably in the late 20s, I began to realize, hey, listen, this isn't just about a book. This isn't just about going to a church and what people wear and reading a prayer. That's not really what it's about. And I began to realize that it was necessary for me to have a relationship with the higher being. You know, God created me, and I just became very hungry to know more, to learn more, to trust. I realized I'm a pretty driven person, and I love to problem solve, and I used to be a really strong people pleaser, and that was very frustrating because I had to learn, even though I'd convinced myself I could fix it, that I wasn't in control, and I had to learn that I was not. No matter how much I thought I was in control, I wasn't the one that was necessarily in control. And so with that, I think I began to grow with an energy connection. I recognize that when there are people in my life who are not positive, their energies are not positive, that it affected me greatly. And I'm very empathetic. And so across all that I was doing in my early, mid, late 20s, anywhere from experiences with college, the influences, you know, of alcohol that you have in college and all the peer pressure, and then looking at, okay, post-college, and now you have to get married, and we were pressured by family members to get married, and then when are you going to have children? You have all these outside influences that start to drive your own emotional well-being when they aren't positive things for you. So that connection that I created and fostered and then continue to foster began to open my eyes that it's not me, and it's not just my burden, and it's not just my responsibility, but I do need to make very conscious decisions that are good for me. So if it means, hey, that person that I'm trying to be friends with is always complaining and it's pulling me down, or that friend that I really love, they're great, but their habits, they aren't good for me. Their influences aren't good for me. I began to recognize, you know, you need to do what's really better for you. So I'm not an Eeyore. When I interview anybody that I'm going to hire, I relate it to Winnie the Pooh and all the characters of the Hundred Acre Wood, because I think it's so telling with those characters about what individuals are like. And so I want somebody to tell me, are you like Tigger? Are you like Piglet? Are you like Eeyore or Pooh or Rabbit or Kanga or Roo? Who are you like? And that tells me a lot, because they can relate to them on a different level. So I think, you know, as I have grown through, again, those deja vus are just, they're fun to me. They just affirm that I probably have been around the block more than once. And just kind of made me aware through other experiences too that I had whenever I was pretty young, I won't say minor, but very brief influences that I had. Hey, listen, we don't just arrive on the earth, die, and then turn to dust. It's not like that. There's more to our energy than that.
Absolutely. So amidst all of that, what do you feel your life purpose is?
You know, that's an ever-evolving question, Nicole. I bet if we asked you 20 years ago, if we asked you that 20 years ago, I'm sure the answer would be different than it is today. So I was blessed with a beautiful angel, and she was born with a heart defect. When she was only 5 months old, her heart stopped for a long period of time, and it resulted in a severe brain injury. And God left me with this wonderful being whom I had known for 5 months, fallen in love with head over heels, saw every ounce of her energy, and she was just amazing. After that event, though, physical being was not the same. She cried all the time, and she had never cried before. She could not swallow. She could not nurse. Her eyes went in 20 different directions, and she couldn't focus on us. She couldn't hold my hand anymore. She didn't laugh. No facial expression. She couldn't hold her head up. She couldn't reach and hold her toys. At that point, I think I really began to mature, and I said to myself, what in the world happened, and what is my role here? And I knew when everything went awry with our daughter, I fell to my knees, and I didn't beg for my daughter to stay here on earth. What I begged for was God's will. I didn't want to somehow command or control something that wasn't going to be blessed and in line with the divine. I just didn't. I knew if I asked for something else, it could be accepted, and the answer might be yes, and then where would I be? So I gave up that control, and I always found an incredible peace with that. I'm answering your question kind of a long way around, because that really opened my eyes that when we talk about what do we think our life's purpose is, I don't think it is a lifelong purpose. I think it's almost a moment-by-moment purpose. We have so many moments in our life, and each one of them may or may not have a purpose for us. A lot of times the purpose is for me to learn something from somebody else. Sometimes the purpose is for me to impart knowledge. Sometimes the purpose is just for me to be able to provide help. I looked at my daughter and I kept asking why. Not so much why did it happen to her, but why me? Why, God, did you give me now this challenge, this ultimate challenge that I certainly never felt up for? And I knew there must be a reason, and I thought, and I've said this many times, I may never know the reason why God chose me, why everything happened to our daughter, but I feel confident that there must be a reason, and I have to keep looking for it. The end result to me has been there are so many parents like us, either born with a child that has a lot of demands and needs, or who have suffered an accident, for example. They're in a car accident. They're in a near-drowning accident. They are in a surgical accident, so a medical accident. But something shifts, and all of a sudden, we're left with caring for an individual who we hadn't anticipated. And there's so much to glean from that. But parents aren't equipped. I'll tell you, as a child of, you know, older parents, I haven't felt really equipped either to do things like care for a mother-in-law with Alzheimer's, or to recently lost my dad, but to step up and be that caregiver at home while he's on hospice. And it really pushes me as an individual and a human to dig deep. And it becomes a moment by moment. What is my purpose in this moment? Is it to be an advocate? Is it to be a consoler? Is it to be imparting love without judgment? So when I look at what my life mission is anymore, I do feel like my daughter had such a strong influence. One of my life influences is to help other parents and information, because there's not enough out there for parents who are in the challenge. It's just not. I think another one of my life missions is to help individuals make sure that they're prepared for the unexpected. You know, our daughter was a minor, and so we were able to, as parents, make decisions for her. That's not the case when we're adults. We can't make decisions for our children. And as an adult, if we can't make decisions for ourselves, if something unexpected goes awry and we cannot make our own decisions, and then planning with our adult group for an end-of-life transition, and that, to me, is, at least professionally, one of my bigger life missions, mostly because of how I saw, and not only professionally but personally, how it rips a family apart when people are not prepared. And truth of the matter is, Nicole, nobody wants to prepare for the unexpected. So it's hard to plan, first of all. I mean, well, what are we planning for, Stacey? I don't know what to expect, you know. But emotionally, it's hard. Yeah, so uncertainty, and it's scary. We're afraid to begin with to look at our own mortality. And you know, there are just so many things that we can do to plan and prepare for the unexpected, whether it means somebody's left incapacitated, like my daughter. I mean, she was never going to get to a point where she could be an independent, functioning person in our society. She was always going to be dependent. And as we go through life, those unexpecteds happen. And you and I have seen more of that in the last 6 months than I think I have ever imagined seeing in our entire lifetime. It's just, I think those are my two main life missions, but I do feel like we all have different missions, but they're just real, they're snippets. You know, you're sitting at the stoplight and the homeless guy is asking for food. Maybe my mission is to get my granola bar out of my console. I'm getting too deep, Nicole, I think.
This is where we live. This is where we live, if we can see. Before we move on to the next level here, how is your daughter now? How is life for her?
Thank you for asking. God called her home 2 years ago.
Huh.
And again, completely unexpected. She had just turned 10 years old. And we got a call. We were away from her at the time, and we got a call at 4 o'clock in the morning that she wasn't breathing.
Oh,
and it's not a call you certainly expect to get. And we contemplated. We already had a discussion. My husband and I had a discussion because she was medically fragile. People are complaining about wearing masks in this day and age. For her, 7 years. After about the third or fourth trip to the hospital, when she gets a cold and she cannot cough, she gets pneumonia. I had PTSD from the hospital. So anybody who came into our home, teachers, therapists, anybody who we took her out to, if she were out in a public restaurant, if she were out shopping with me, we took her out all the time because I wanted her to have those experiences. Those individuals were masked. And we would wear a mask if my son were sick, he had a mask. And that's what kept her going for so many years is what the doctors attribute it to.
Wow.
So we were blessed for 10 years with her, and she wasn't sick, Hall. And what I knew at the time was God decided and she decided that it was time for her to move on. She's with me all the time, and I see her all the time. She presents herself, in some pretty amazing ways and talks to me in some pretty amazing ways. I honestly am really glad she's not here during this pandemic because I would just, be a nervous wreck about, am I going to bring it home to her unexpectedly? And I didn't know because I didn't have the symptoms. And she would never survive this. She wouldn't. But God's plan's perfect, and I know I will see her again face-to-face one day when she's whole.
So what kind of ways are you encountering her?
So one of the first ways that she showed herself to me, we were down at the beach when this happened. Was through dolphins. And I love the beach. She hated the beach. She didn't understand the sand and the wind and the noises and the seagulls and the waves. She didn't understand them. And so she had a lot of sensory issues and they scared her. And so one of the first ways after she passed away in the first couple of days were such a tremendous amount of dolphins. And I knew it was her. I knew it. I took my son. I said, let's kind of get distracted. Let's go on a dolphin tour. I rented a boat, had a captain, and there were no dolphins in all the usual spots. And he said, I don't understand. I said, well, I do. They're all out. I'm telling you, they're all out in front of our oceanfront condo. And so he says, well, let's go around there. So we go out there, and sure enough, pod after pod after pod after pod. So now when I go to the beach, I look for the dolphins, and I know when I see them, it's her, and she's free, and she's swimming, and she's happy. Before she passed away, years before she passed away, we were down at the beach. I don't believe she was with us on this trip because I remember being on the beach with my son, who was a lot younger at the time, and I found the most beautiful, very small, about the size of a dime shell, very unique, and it was this pastel yellow and white, and I as soon as I saw it, I immediately thought of her. It was just beautiful. I thought, this is Shayla's shell. As soon as I found it, it left me. I literally lost it, and I'm sure it was because I was, working with my 6-year-old at the time, my son, and I lost it. So I was, kind of disgruntled. Okay, well, easy come, easy go. You know how that goes. And so I never saw another one of those shells. And just kind of coincidentally, when she passed away, we were in the process of buying a condo at the beach, an oceanfront condo. And it was the not quite 2 weeks after her memorial service, we closed on the condo. And so we went down to the beach, and it was actually on my birthday. We walked out on the beach, and oh my gosh, there is one of those shells. I could not believe it.
Wow.
Years had gone by, and there is one of those shells. So now when we're at the beach, I talk to Shayla, and I look for Shayla shells. I was just there a couple of weeks ago, and she blessed me with 69 of those shells. And I have not,
really?
At that particular beach, found that many of those shells. I have one in my wallet. I have one on my altar. I have one in my car. And she's blessed me twice with double-sided ones. Those shells have been cracked open, and there are two halves. Who knows where the other half is? I found two whole ones that have been sealed, cemented shut, and those are extra special for me. Another way is probably a little bit more common, but butterflies, hers is a monarch. And that one I haven't seen as much this year. Interestingly, there's another really cool way she'll present herself, and this has been something more recent, and I have talked to both a shaman, who's not my husband, as well as a medium about it, and that's through numbers. She gives me numbers for before the show today. I'm focused and I'm praying, and I saw 444 pop up, and I said, Shayla, I know you're with me. And so it's almost like either when I need it or she's trying to give me a kiss, I see those numbers. But it's not always on a clock, which is really the fun part. It might be the gas price is 222. You know? It might be the miles per gallon on my dashboard in my car is 333. So they come up in different ways, and that's just another way that she reaches out to me.
Ooh, I've just got goosebumps everywhere. Ooh, love it. No, that's so profound. I mean, the shell story is amazing. You should do a photo book of that. The so significant around that it was right after 2 weeks after the service, and the uniqueness of the shell and your birthday, all those special, you know, energies, it just resonates so deeply. Wow. I had that all week this week. I find we get those messages like almost like assurances when things are getting a little bit dodgy, you know, energetically. And I opened my phone yesterday and I had 777 text messages and 7,777 emails, new. I'm like, no, okay, I'm going to brace myself for something here. It's very intriguing how this stuff works. So, God bump. All right. At this point, we should ask how you became involved in the legal profession. How did that come up?
So I am a licensed attorney. I was an alternate juror on a murder trial when I was only 19 years old. You have to go back because I graduated law school in 1998. So while I try to stay really young and vibrant, I've got some mileage on me in terms of years of practice. And when we go back then into, you know, it would have been 1989, think about technology and our access to resources. Our TV was more restrictive. We didn't have on-demand movies and TV shows, and yeah, you could go to the movies, but hopefully you had a VHS, you know, player, that sort of thing. And so my eyes, I was very, very, I guess naive is the right word. Like, I didn't know what the real world really looked like because we didn't see it from YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. It was just really different. So this murder trial that I was seated as an alternate juror on was a son and a father dispute, and the father was shot and killed. And as I watched it unfold in front of me all the way through the end, I just fell in love with the courtroom, and I fell in love with the challenge of finding the answer to the story. And I didn't get to sit through the deliberations. They did find him guilty, and I totally agreed, even though I didn't get to sit through the deliberations. But I was a biology major. I was actually going to medical school. Both my parents are x-ray technicians, and I had been working at Duke University Medical Center since I was 16 years old, you know, doing reception work and pushing patients. And then I was working in the lab through college and stuff like that because I was a biology major. And all of a sudden I'm going, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. So I went to the DA at the time, who I had just sat through the murder trial with, and I said, hey, listen, I think I want to be a lawyer. Can I come work for you for free all summer long and see if I can sort this out? He's like, free? Heck yeah. And so I did for 3 months, and it really opened my eyes, you know, into, number one, some of the awfulness and the evils in our society, which, you know, again, I think just feeds back into where I've grown to in life and understanding that people do make mistakes, but there are evil forces that absolutely have a hold of people. I've seen it. Sometimes you can see it in their eyes. I remember the first time as a lawyer, I was clerking for a judge, and this was a child molestation. You can, there's something different about somebody who sexually abuses a child, and you can see it. So that really is why I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. Now, crazily, I was afraid I couldn't do it because I knew that not only did I have to get through college, but then you have to go to law school, which back then it took full 3 years. Some of the schools have adapted. But then you had to sit for one massive exam. So everything was on your shoulders at the end of 3 years. And I thought, oh, my gosh, my memory's terrible. I don't know that I can remember all this. But prayer, and I think, honestly, this is exactly where God wants me, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, is how I ended up being a lawyer.
Wow. It's so interesting. I'm so young that you were exposed to it. But this is the life purpose piece, right? Because some people would be deflected off heaviness in those places rather than attracted to being this enlightened warrior energy in it, you know? So that's intriguing. But
I think it's just a sense of justice, Nicole. You know, when you see somebody who is hurt, I've always wanted, it's kind of funny because I've never taken, as a young child, teenager, even into my young adult years, I had trouble standing up for myself. I was bullied like a lot of kids. And I think as I grew into my empathetic nature,
I think we have just an issue going on with our lines. We'll do a quick reset. I think we've lost Stacey. Hopefully I'm still on and she'll call back in momentarily. I'm not quite sure what was going on there. Everybody stay put. We're in the middle of getting to know Stacey Walters and on the introductory interview journey with her just now on newsforthesoul.com. If you do miss any of this or want to hear her other shows, it is at newsforthesoul.com. I think we have her back on now. Stacey, are you back with us?
I am. I'm back, Stacey, by the way.
You went into some other place, but you're back. That's good. So I heard you saying it was about
happened.
And justice. So that's kind of where we last heard you.
Yeah, just really, you know, I've just been a real altruistic type person for all of my life, and I just love helping people. And for me, that's really what it's all about. That's the internal reward. It's not about money, if I could do everything for free. I used to dream about, hey, just everybody make the same thing. I just want to help people. It doesn't work that way in our society, but it is. It's just about helping people. I used to be a litigator, by the way. I did insurance defense litigation for years. So you would find me for over 13 years in the courtroom, going toe-to-toe with experts and doctors, depositions, motions, arguing the other side in front of the judges. And after Shayla was born, I realized that lifestyle for my profession was not going to be conducive to raising the angel that God gave me. You know, it wasn't even about the hours. It was, I traveled all over the whole state. If she were sick, I couldn't just call up the court and postpone the trial. The partners, if I were out, were just as demanding about my billable hours. They had to stay up there. I also had a son. Evan was not quite 2.5 years old or older than her. And so I began to realize that, you know, I don't know how long I can keep doing this. So I was actually encouraged by another attorney who was leasing space with inside of our firm to look at doing estate planning. He says, you know, Stacy, your heart's in it different. You care about people, which is an unusual trait for a lot of attorneys who are very stoic and not really loving and, you know, give you the warm fuzzies. And he said, with your daughter's conditions, you know a lot about some of the services through the government that are really key to planning when we look at estate planning for individuals who are disabled and for our elderly population who may need long-term care services like a nursing home. He said, I really think you need to look at this. I said, oh, but I'm not a CPA. He was a CPA. I said, you know, and I don't know anything about the tax code. He says, well, do you know some CPA, Stacy? Well, yeah, I do. He says, well, then why don't you try? I'll mentor you. So he actually started to mentor me, and that is what pointed me and launched me off in that direction. I gave up every other area of the law except for estate planning. In 2015, I had been mentoring and dabbling in it and doing and balance things out from 2000. Let's see, Shayla was born in 08. I think somewhere around the end of 2010 until about 2015. And in 2015, I said, that's it. This is all I'm going to do. I'm going to focus on this. And everybody needs to have a plan. The ones who say, what do I care? I'll never be able to help them. But the people who do care, they don't want to hurt their family. They want to make sure that they're prepared for the unexpected. Those are my ideal clients. People always say, who do you want to work with? I want to, and here's what I pray before every meeting, before every event that I do. Dear God, bring me only the people that are good for me. Let all the other pain in the butts go to the other lawyers and bring me the ones that I can actually help, who want my help. That's what I ask for. And he's true. He's true to it. I have great clients, and I'm very, very blessed with my practice.
I love that. I kind of do the same thing when I'm inviting hosts. I have a private intuitive process where I kind of put in my order as well. I love it.
I like it. Put in my order.
Yeah, it works. Now, why is it so heavy and tough for us to look at estate planning?
Oh, that's a great question. Number one is because we all think we're going to live forever, right? We wish, but that's, you know, to me, that's the optimism that is placed in our mentality until our world starts to open up and different influences start to shape us differently. My grandmother lived to be 98 years old. She was a nurse, which she didn't become a nurse until her later years. And I remember she got really frustrated probably about 6-8 months before she passed away. She said her leg was hurting, going to the doctor. And she said, do you know what that young whippersnapper said to me? What they said, Grandma? She said, he looked at me and said, well, Miss Riley, what do you expect? You're getting old. And she looked at me and she said, I looked at him and pointed my finger in his face and said, Sonny, you listen to me. From the day we are born, we've been getting old, and my leg was not hurting like this last week. So that really stuck with me and resonated with me for so long now that we just don't see our own mortality. So I think that's really kind of number one. We're just all going to think that we're going to live forever. Number two, when we are younger, oh, my gosh, you would not find me climbing a tree and jumping out of it today, right? Because I know that, number one, my body's gotten older, it's not as good a shape. And number two, there's some real consequences now to our actions. So a lot about this because we don't think about consequences. We don't think about what happens if I'm in a car accident. What happens if the doctor prescribes the wrong medication and I have a massive allergic reaction? Our brains don't think about the consequences. And that's what we really have to prepare for, are the consequences, the unexpected. And so it's too easy to procrastinate. We're super busy people. And when we want to try to think about this, I just feel like everybody, every bone in our being, in our mind, no, I don't want to deal with this. So one of the crafts I think that I have and talents that God has given to me is literally holding somebody's hand through the process. I because of my empathy, I feel like I'm really engaged with my clients. It's not about filling out some paperwork and then me crafting a form. That's not about it at all. It's about helping them understand their own self and the what ifs and how would they want things done and who would they want in charge. And then showing them if they don't prepare, if we can't find it, then what happens? Because a lot of people don't understand all of those what ifs. So that's why I really pride myself on educating people before COVID. Since 2015, I do no less than about 8 to 12 public seminars a month in person, in venues, usually a restaurant. And I talk for an hour and I help educate people because knowledge is power, number one. You're never going to make a good decision until you don't know what you don't know. And number two is people love food. So if I want to get the message out, I bring them to a venue. That's all, you know, gone by the wayside for the time being, but people are still hungry. Mm-hmm. And now it's because of the unexpected. They are, you know, going, oh, wait a minute. What if something does happen to me? Because now they're hearing from their neighbor and they're hearing from, you know, the news or from their daughter or whoever about how our society now is completely being affected in ways that we've never expected it to be.
Mm. Yeah, so that's affected you on many levels with your business then.
Oh, yes. My business by far has not remained lucrative and profitable by any stretch of the imagination. The first couple of months, we were doing about a third of the business. In May, I only got one new client. Normally, I get 15 to 18 new clients a month. Business is starting to pick back up, thankfully, but I've had to redirect how do I reach people. So I decided I want to do this radio blog with you and really just try to help people understand things and learn things that they haven't thought about that really they should think about when they're ready. And that's just it. Estate planning's a path. We're all on our own path at our own pace. And so for people who I talk to, if they aren't ready, I'm never going to make them ready. But when they're ready, they come back. So at this point, I've had quite a few people from 2015 to the present who are saying, I have procrastinated long enough. It's time for me to get started. And then we're doing other things, too, of course, out there in all the digital world and video conferences and stuff like that to try to adapt. But, you know, it's interesting the trickle-down effect and how, yes, I've had to lay off staff. Yes, we've had to apply for government support to try to pay payroll. It's been frightening on my end. It certainly has opened up my eyes again to, hey, how could you have better prepared for this? So if, you know, you're putting together safety, are your eggs all in the one basket? And is that how they should stay as you move forward? Or what should you do different? It definitely has caused me from a professional standpoint to have to pause and figure out what do we do? Where do we go?
Yes. So then the whole planet has had that reaction. It's interesting time. You know, one thing I want to touch on before we get to the very top of the hour here is, you know, being used this as a resource, like send us the info we can post on your profile, but also about for the parenting resources for people with health issues with their kids. The other topic we were talking about earlier, you know, send us that as well. Like, let's get that out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to. And I'd love to, you know, for people to be able to see those resources and hopefully tap into them. I sure will. And for, you know, people who want more information, particularly about estate planning across the states. Now, keep in mind, of course, I'm only licensed in North Carolina. The process itself might be different, but the concept is the same. Everybody needs the same core basic set of documents while you're alive. Afterwards, that's when we really start to navigate differently and where I get really intimate and close with my clients in those conversations. So estate planning is not a one-size-fits-all, but there is a need for every single individual once we turn age 18 to have that core set of documents to plan for the unexpected. If I can't make my own healthcare decisions, who's going to do that for me? If I can't pay my own bills because I stroked out, for example, who is going to be able to do that for me? And so those documents are just absolutely key for everybody to have when they turn age 18. So we even have, for our more, you know, college-level type kids, the parents who go, oh, my gosh, what do you mean I can't make medical care decisions for my kid anymore and the doctor won't tell me what's going on? We have a parent preparedness packet, too. But we have a great, I'm going to call it a guide. It talks about a lot of the end-of-life type necessities, anywhere from your powers of attorney down to wills. And so that's something certainly we have it electronic that we would be able to share with anybody who was interested in just getting really a broad overview, even if it's outside of North Carolina.
Beautiful. Well, that's a perfect time to do some shameless self-promotion right now. We've got about 3 minutes to the top. So anything you want to share, perfect time.
Absolutely. You know, people, one of the things I have done since 2015 is I ask our clients when they get to the end of their process with me, how was their experience? Is there anything that they would share about it? And I really pride myself on those responses because while integrity is always super important, I think for anybody, especially us lawyers, we don't have the best reputation all the time for some crazy reason. I'm different. I'm different because I actually care. I care what my clients think. I care what my clients say. I care about my clients, and I care about their families. And one of the reasons why I care is because I have seen what happens when either people didn't plan or they had an old, outdated plan, or they didn't have enough knowledge, and while they thought things were going to go one way, they went a different way, and it didn't meet their goals, and it creates a mess. And the mess isn't just a matter of time and sorting it out. It's usually relationship destroying. It happened in my own family, and it hurts. And it happened to me at a time when our daughter had just suffered that cardiac arrest, and the why behind, why would the family behave in this way? Don't they know what we're going through? For gosh sakes, our daughter just died in front of us, but yet they're soaked on, I want this, give me my money, this person died. And, you know, it was really heartbreaking and emotionally, I still struggle today to understand how could a family member that you were close to, that you loved and that you thought loved you, could be so cold-hearted. I don't think it was cold-heartedness, but death and money, and I don't care how much or how little, I've seen it across all levels. It doesn't matter. It does strange things to us.
Wow.
And when we aren't prepared, the people who pay the price are the people we love the most. Because it's absolutely true, Nicole, there are only two things in life that are certain. Help me out. What are they?
Well, death and taxes.
And taxes. You got it. And so that's my passion. That is my passion, is I want to help people. I'm not just a lawyer sitting on the side saying I need to make money to support my family. I'm a person who cares about what happens because I know what the consequences are if things don't flow the way that you want them to. And honestly, turmoil that's left behind, it's not the paperwork, it's not the time, it's not going to court, it's not frozen assets. It's the emotional anxiety and stress that honestly could be prevented, I'm going to tell you, 95% of the time. It really could be prevented. But you have to have a current plan in place, and you have to have the knowledge to make those decisions. And in order to have that perfect, what we're all about is educating people to help them get to that point.
And that brings up so many important points and questions about how people, as you say, act in those times. It's just bizarre. Wow.
By the way, I don't do estate planning litigation. That contested stuff, you can take it somewhere else. I jumped out of that boat. I'm done with that one.
Well, I look forward to your future shows and learning more about all that you do. And it was really great getting to know you today, Stacey, and I'm looking forward to more.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Nicole. And I, too, feel very blessed to have this opportunity to be able to reach a much broader audience, I think, in an area that it's just so needed. We all need to hear this, and we need to hear it more than once, and being able to support your show in this way is just it's a wonderful opportunity, and I want to thank you again for letting me do this.
Pleasure and honor, and I look forward to having you back 2 weeks from now.
Perfect. Thank you, Nicole. Have a great weekend.
You too. All the best. Stacey Wilders, Commanding on Purpose, all linked up at newsforthesoul.com. We're back with more after this quick break.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Spiritual beings, warriors of the light, those involved in raising and opening consciousness, expanding consciousness in ourselves and others, this is a perfect time to cultivate our own demonstration of what we already know, what we have already been privy to, what realizations that are already within our heart and soul. So I feel it's the perfect timing, while there's this instability, for us to inject a spiritual stability from within ourselves to the world, and starting with our families and friends and colleagues around us. And that comes from injecting the world with more humor, more lightness, more care, more love, more truth, all the universal values that, you know, that we all stand for, you know. Well, he called this time the time of the great quickening, the quickening of consciousness. And as consciousness quickens into the light, into greater awakening, so do the forces of endarkment, all the old models, the old methods, the entrenched politics, the entrenched agendas, however they might be, those models no longer hold validity or are Gaia-centric. They were based on just human-centric or me-centric values. And now we have to. I mean, the actuality is we are Gaia-centric. We are aspects of the whole. We are symbiotic with all of nature and reality. And whether we think so or not, we're not here to dominate the world. We're here to be in harmonious, synchronous, symbiotic, loving relationship, conscientious relationship with the whole. But the path of the warrior sage is what Stuart Wilde and my teachers taught me. And it's a path where we recognize we are the divine being embodied already. We do not need to be in fear of these things. recognizing that I am equal to this. I am not a victim to these energies. I am not below them. They cannot manipulate me in dark and nefarious ways. They can't attack my aura. They can't infuse my space. These are all imprints, even in the human potential, spiritual worlds, that continuously feed the fear that the invisible world can harm us.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
And we're back. We're live. It's 4 p.m. Pacific time, April 4th, 2019. Time for the next installment of my series, WTF, not standing for what you think it stands for. It stands for Where to Focus. The reason being, the inspiration, of course, for this series is the fact that we have been saying WTF for a couple of years in particular, that the things going on our planet and on the astrological new year of this year, we launched this series as a counterattack to get back on track and focus where we need to focus to create where we want to go. So that's the short story. My next guest in the series today, Satyan Raja. We haven't talked to him for a while. I first met him on the battlefields of Enlightened Warrior Training Camp nearly two decades ago. And what ensued was an amazing enlightened journey, explorations of many topics on the air over many years, and also attending many of his amazing events. Life-changing moments, including a Kundalini awakening that I still am not quite over. That wasn't on the brochure, and that was definitely life-changing. But let's talk about where we're at today. The infamous warrior sage himself, Satyan Raja. Welcome back to News for the Soul.
Nicole, always a pleasure, my good friend. And I'm always pleased to see and hear all the ways that you serve the world, and it's just a pleasure to be with you again.
It's my honor. It's been too long since we've talked in this way. I did see you at your birthday party where I surprised you with a belly dance. That was hilarious.
That was wonderful.
I loved it. But, you know, we haven't compared notes on where we're at energetically on this planet. So we started, as I said, this series in particular over the last events on the planet of the last 2 years, seeing the incredible divisiveness or alleged divisiveness and political destabilization around the world. What's your take on where we're at?
Well, I think everything is as it should be, on track. So in other words, you know, the perturbation, the shaking of the foundations of people's cores, instability in politics, instability in the world, instability with the environment, instability on so many levels is happening, and we as spiritual beings, warriors of the light, those involved in raising and opening consciousness, expanding consciousness in ourselves and others, this is a perfect time to cultivate our own demonstration of what we already know, what we've already been privy to, what realizations that are already within our heart and soul that could be expressed more, brought out more, expressed with more boldness and willingness and capacity. So I feel it's the perfect timing, while there's this instability, for us to inject a spiritual stability from within ourselves to the world, and starting with our families and friends and colleagues around us. And that comes from injecting the world with more humor, more lightness, more care, more love, more truth, all the universal values that, you know, that we all stand for, you know?
So everything's perfectly on track. You know, it's interesting, you and I share a very special teacher from our path, Stuart Wilde, and he talked about this time extensively.
Yes, yeah.
What did he share with you?
Well, he called this time the time of the great quickening, the quickening of consciousness. And as consciousness quickens into the light, into greater awakening, so do the forces of endarkment, all the the old models, the old methods, the entrenched politics, the entrenched agendas, however they might be, those models no longer hold validity or are Gaia-centric. They were based on just human-centric or me-centric values. And now we have to. I mean, the actuality is we are Gaia-centric. We are aspects of the whole. We are symbiotic with all of nature and reality. And whether we think so or not, we're not here to dominate the world. We're here to be in harmonious, synchronous, symbiotic, loving relationship, conscientious relationship with the whole. So this is the time. This is the time to embrace that we are of nature. We are not rulers of nature. We're not stewards of nature, but we are just an aspect of nature to be in flow with the rest. That dawning, that recognition, that Gaia-centric, Earth, Mother Earth, wife-centric view, I feel is really the thing to pick up and nourish and flourish and embrace in ourselves. When we do that at a soul level, it starts showing up at a physical level. So we need to embrace that soul level of knowing we are and part of this great Gaia dimension.
One of the challenges I've heard the conscious collective voicing in the last couple of years in particular was the shock and surprising nature of how this, the dark and dark matter like that, how that showed up. It was like a rug being pulled out from under their feet and they weren't able to get back into their power to anchor the energy. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. You know, the thing with that type of energy, that type of disempowering energy, it comes across very strong. It's like a bully that looks strong, but if you were to investigate and take time and look behind the bully's external facade of strength and power, really there's someone hurt or in fear or having a lack of self-esteem and not valuing themselves. And when people don't value their own inner nature, how can they value other people? That is the true power. It's not a power that comes from might. It comes from when we see people like that, when we see politicians, when we see leaders that are not exemplary. I mean, that's a joke. Who is exemplary? Demonstrating those highest virtues, especially in those worlds where to get to those high places, you might have had to play all types of games other than of the light, you know, other than of absolute truth. So the actuality is we have that power by recognizing that these are the expressions of bulliness and endarkment. They're just divine beings as well. That's it. And when we recognize them as this is the choices that they're making based on who knows why, who knows where, taking this loftier approach, and then recognizing that I am equal to this. I am not a victim to these energies. I am not below them. They cannot manipulate me in dark and nefarious ways. They can't attack my aura. They can't infuse my space. These are all imprints, even in the human potential, spiritual worlds, that continuously feed the fear that the invisible world can harm us. I believe there's more in the visible world that can harm us that we need to be aware of than the invisible worlds. And there's far more power in the invisible worlds to draw from to fortify us in any world, anywhere. And that's the attitude to have. That's far more empowering than one that's constantly looking our shoulders or looking in our etheric or in our subtle bodies for nefarious influence, because that'll never end. Those worlds are constant and never ending. But the path of the warrior sage is what Stuart Wilde and my teachers taught me, and it's a path where we recognize we are the divine being embodied already. We do not need to be in fear of these things.
I love that. How do we get our boundaries, our energy bodies, ourselves empowered and strengthened or re-empowered so that we know that and live that?
That's a great question. This is you know how martial artists, they have to go to a dojo. I'm a martial artist. I train in a dojo is what the Japanese call it, a place where you go to consciously develop your strength, your armament, your clarity, your wisdom, your truth, your humility, and your power, all simultaneously, right? So I believe that if each one of us is willing to take on physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual disciplines, that we need healing as well, but we also need disciplines. So much in our spiritual worlds, there's a lot of work around healing going on, healing of ourselves on multiple levels. And that, by all means, is so valuable. I don't want to discount that in any way. But also with healing must come concerted actions in life. There must come disciplines and practices. We can heal ourselves from past emotional wounds. We can integrate limiting beliefs and thoughts and imprints and associations we have through healing methods and healing philosophies. But then we also have to have the disciplines to say, okay, like you took up the discipline of belly dancing years back, and now, you're a performer and trainer and teacher. And I remember when you started that journey, I mean, your whole life transformed because you took on a physical discipline. You were already at that time so profoundly astute in the spiritual domain, but you took on the physical dimension at the next degree, and that up-leveled everything, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I believe the same thing is true for all of us. We have to take on, and it would be good for everyone to get involved and do some martial art training to learn how to strengthen their physical sense of well-being, their external body feeling good, the mammalian side within going, yes, I can handle myself. When the mammal feels more confident within ourselves, it allows that energy to ascend beyond the three lower chakras into the higher chakras. But if the mammalian body consistently feels fear, then we are consistently drawn back to the three lower chakras of survival, base sexuality, and the seeking for power, which never ends.
Mm. It's interesting. I remember the first day I met Stuart Wilde. He looked at me in horror and said my energy boundaries were like just not there. Porous, spongy things. And he's always been,
yes. He
always told me to do martial arts. So that's still on my to-do list too, because it's so connected to physicalizing the non-physical, the energy, right?
Exactly. We could do all types of energetic work, and that's valuable. And I advocate that, and I do that. I study and I practice that myself. Yet, it's getting into the physical body, because we are a multidimensional being, and our physical body is of this vibration, and this is the one we're relating with the world. And so it's very valuable for us warrior sages who are drawn to this path of one foot in the metaphysical, one foot in the world of the material. Those of us who have that calling, like you and I know we're of that ilk, then cultivating the ascending line of awakening and ascension and spirituality and enlightenment is valuable, but also as valuable is the descending line of making sure our bodies are strong, are healthy, we're getting vigorous with our body, and that we're, and like I say, the warrior of the warrior sage part is, yes, do a foundational self-defense training. Krav Maga is a very powerful Israeli martial art. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is what I study, which is very powerful and very pragmatic martial art that anyone can learn at any age. I highly recommend Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's a great place to start strengthening your body, mind, emotions, and your spirit, and then continue to do the work of inner meditation, inner awakening, whatever that is, but combine it with strengthening your body, and boom, you'll be a 1-2 knockout influence and person of impact.
Mm. How has your work evolved in preparation for the time we're now in?
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, Nicole, but this Saturday it will be the launch of our Warrior Sage International Consciousness Dojos.
I signed up. I'm coming.
So how it's evolved is this. For many years, as you know, I gave private seminars to students, to all types of leaders, people who came together to learn the path of the warrior sage. And I got a strong calling from spirit over the last, 2 years, that it's time to bring this out to the greater public and greater whole, and to help communities create dojos. Dojo is the Japanese term for people practice martial arts and improve themselves together and commune together. So this Saturday, we're releasing our first Abundance Activation, which is our first Warrior Sage Dojo, and everyone is invited. And how it's evolved is very simple. Now this is all for free. Our whole trainings, the whole path of the Warrior Sage, all our community events, there's no money exchange whatsoever. And the intention is that us Warrior Sages find each other, come together, find out what our deepest goals, dreams, and our soul calling is, what we're meant to do so that we live and die in love complete, you know, without regrets, and that we foster each other to live that way, and we arise together. So that's a huge evolution in my work, in the sense that it's time to bring it out to the world, time to bring Warrior Sages around the world together, and to foster this this form, this particular strand of empowerment, which brings the power of the warrior and the wisdom of the sage, and evokes that in each other, and we get to grow together. So as I think you can hear it in my spirit, I'm quite moved and called by this, you know?
Beautiful. Why is it all free?
Well, we need to get into the hands of everyone. We need to get warriors to come together and to really cultivate and create communities together. The number one thing that's missing in the human potential world and amongst warriors is coming together for real face-to-face and contacting and connecting and practicing together. So that's why it's all for free. I have my other, you know, I make money from my consulting and my coaching work, the work I do with businesses. So because that is where my livelihood is. My livelihood doesn't need to be made through my seminars and our trainings anymore. So my whole team decided we need to bring it out to the world, and that's why we're doing it.
Why is the focus of the first one abundance?
Well, the three main yogic warnings that we need to be aware of that the ancient masters have told us about are sex, power, and money. These are the forces that either can destroy us, we can shoot our own self in the foot. It's the area of the most ignorance, the most ego, and the most darkness on our planet, sex, money, and power. And so those are the three trainings and activations I feel are the most valuable for people to start with and to have a good base of self-realization and awakening with. So abundance is all about removing the obstacles in our consciousness to not just making more money. You know, there's tons of how to make more money courses. You can, you know, one popping up every day if you go online. But very few people are sharing about how to have wisdom, how to unify our enlightenment with our creation of freedom through wealth. It's a whole different way of looking at it. So that's what we're helping people experience. And I believe if we just go for more accumulation right now, more and more money, and only look at abundance as more gain, then we're going to self-destruct and destroy the world. We need to have a viewpoint and awaken our viewpoint, elevate it, mature it, to be a whole system viewpoint of wealth, where how I exchange in the world and receive in the world be for the benefit of the greater whole. So this is the new paradigm. We get it in our heart, but how do you actually live it is what the Abundance Activation is all about. And I think it's valuable. It's very important that people learn to remove the obstacles of their mind regarding wealth and then come together with other people who care about the same values and wish to arise and support each other and come in together.
Well, our programming around such things from an empowerment standpoint is so deep. There's so many layers to it. So I think that is really important work you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Recently, when I talked to last week, I think it was, former CIA remote viewer David Morehouse about the current situation on the planet, and he was describing the fourth turning of the cyclical humanity patterns and coming into hopefully a creation phase, the next phase. Where do you see us with that as far as coming out of the current situation without too much destruction?
You know, in the yogic, in the Hindu system, there's four yugs, the four great ages. In the ancient Kamishan system, there's five phases of the return of the light. And in the ancient Egyptian or Kamishan philosophy, is parallel with the ancient, Hindu philosophy, in that we are now, the tides have turned. We are now ripe for great consciousness, the return to the fullness of the light. So imagine we were in a one time it was a fully enlightened society in some mythical time or dimension. And then through time there was a degradation and more ego, more individualness, more meanness came in. And then later it became half and half, and then later it became more predominant, what they called the Kali Yuga, or the time of the dark, where ignorance and illusion and manipulation and ego and greed and all the lower values were reigning. And in much of the world, that's happening a lot. But the tide has shifted energetically. The tide has shifted into now really the most profound time of the quickening of human consciousness and unity that I've ever seen. In the events and the trainings I've given, people are attaining self-realization in record speed. People are growing what used to take months and years to have breakthroughs. They're achieving in like minutes and hours, really. And so I know that for those of us who wish to be on the cutting edge of transforming and quickening our evolutionary space, who we're meant to be, what we're meant to be, our space of highest shining, it's our most highest opportunity to find, discover, and align to that and to express it.
I know you've kind of addressed this already, but how do we, if we can, if it's in our highest good to do so, speed up the process?
Well, exactly. Well, the quickening is happening, and so an active engagement in training. Of course, everyone is welcome to be part of our Warrior Sage Dojos, if that calls you. But really, it's what are the things that really move you? Is it yoga? Is it meditation? Is it martial arts? Is it some form of pilgrimage? What is your within saying? What within your soul is yearning to be experienced? What's yearning to be expressed? What's wanting to happen in your soul that perhaps you've been not looking at or repressing or shunting off? Let that side bloom and ask yourself, what's wanting to emerge in my life? And when you ask yourself, what's wanting to emerge in my life? And you also ask yourself, what must I do so I live and love and even die complete without any regrets? These powerful questions will elicit the deeper truth. Now, the warrior within follows through on that truth and says, okay, if inside my heart says what's wanting to emerge is more time in nature, more time to read, more time to take on more disciplines of meditation or nature walks or waking up earlier. What to do is follow through. How you'll quicken now is following your impulse. And by following the impulse, you're training yourself to have loyalty to the inner calling, to the inner messages, more than the distractions of the world. And your loyalty to the inner callings will speed you, your spiritual evolution so fast right now, it's just going to have you spinning. It's going to have you evolving, spinning, and learning lessons at a record time. But what's beautiful about this time is also we do not have to have those lessons accompanied with the hardships of the past. We can actually grow in gentle, harmonious, transitional ways from old consciousness to an awakened consciousness. And we can do this now in a time with the least amount of wrecking our lives and starting from scratch. We can grow from where we're at. And that is the beautiful time that we're in right now.
We actually have an email question from Maureen in Ontario. And she's asking, how does one buffer the effects of the negativity which are causing her to get sick and feel exhausted and lack of motivation?
Again, it sounds like she's been knocked down for a while, you know, and some of us have been knocked down for a while. The first thing that you have to do is you got to get away from the influence of all the chaos. You got to say, okay, I'm going to go away for a weekend. I'm going to take 3 days. I want to take 5 days. I want to take 1 day. More than what you think is sensible, dedicate yourself to this time of divine replenishment. where you're saying, I'm going to remove myself, as our teacher Stewie would say, from the world of TikTok, from the world of my mechanistic habits. If my Saturday and Sunday are mechanistic this way, I'm going to break away. If everyone expects me to be around and do this and this, I'm going to arrange it so that the kids are taken care of by grandma or a friend or whatever, and I'm going to go into get an Airbnb in some cottage somewhere in the boonies for a weekend. Whatever, it's not what you do. It's that you dedicate yourself to removing yourself from the chaos for a few days where no cell phones, no internet, no waveforms, no... You're not around any transmissions from the outside world. You've shut yourself off from that, and you've said, this is my time for replenishment. You take a book, or you do nothing, and you be with the great Mother Goddess of Earth. You do nothing. You enjoy. You just be with the truth of your body, of your heart, and your being. And just that, there will be a quickening, and there will be a natural healing process that starts to denature and deconstruct and allow those negative energies to